Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I hope you're doing well today. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful hump day. What Wednesday is it? I think it's a third Wednesday, you know, with the way the month was scheduled. We had our third Thursday and third Friday last month. Speaking of third Thursday, we usually have Burton Kelso on, and he actually is in town. I get a chance to lay eyes on him and meet him. We get a chance to have some good conversation when he's on Tech Thursday. But today, we are privileged to have the superintendent of Orange County Schools on with us. She is going to tell us a little bit, give us an update, and we appreciate her joining us in the midst of our of the school year that's just begun and so much stuff going on. Dr. Barbara Jenkins. Dr. Jenkins, are you with us? Oh, no. Uh-oh. So we're going to try to find out what's going on with Dr. Jenkins. We're going to have her on soon. So, but anyway, the number, if you have questions for the superintendent, she's going to be on with us this hour, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. But again, thank you for being with us today. We also weren't able to do it yesterday. We're going to try to get someone on from Adopt a Classroom on. Hopefully tomorrow. If not, we're going to try to have them on a little later to talk about that program and how it's going. And they were one of my first guests when we started the show, and really going to try to see about getting them back on with us to get a rundown on what's going on with that organization and some other ones too. And I can't think of what, there's another organization that we wanted to try to have on, because we really are working to try to help our teachers, help our students, you know, have a, I guess you could say, as smoothly as possibly run school year, so to speak. So anyway, I'm going to take a look a little bit at some other stuff. But first, we're going to take a quick break because I want to check on Dr. Jenkins and see if she's able to still come on with us. And so don't go away. Just going to take a really quick break and try to get her on. So the number, like I said, is 516-387-1944 if you have questions for Dr. Jenkins or something else you want to talk about today. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi there, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are going to talk with the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools here in Central Florida, Dr. Barbara Jenkins. Good morning. How are you, Dr. Jenkins?
Good morning. I'm well. Glad to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time out. I know things are crazy with this first week or so of school, but we really appreciate you taking the time out. So how have you been handling this first, I guess, almost 2 weeks now of school?
You know what? We had one of the smoothest openings we've had in years. It was really quite positive. I think the only downside, should I call you G or Gretchen?
Whatever you want.
I think the downside. Well, I love the title of the show, so I think I should call you G. So
thank you.
So G's Power Hour. So the only challenge that first week was the weather. So we had thunderstorms every afternoon.
Yeah.
But parents have been so understanding. When we have thunderstorm, there's lightning in the vicinity, we hold our children. We do not try to dismiss and get to buses or walking and riding because it's dangerous in Central Florida. And so
right.
When we had those kind of delays that first week of school, parents were very understanding. That was our only challenge, outside of the typical car circle backups because everybody wants to drive their child the first few days instead of putting them on the bus. It was a very smooth opening.
Right, right. Yeah, and I did hear, and I was not aware of that. I think that's a very good policy. I had heard about some confusion. Some parents, I guess, weren't aware, didn't know, or didn't think it through that you have that policy. But, it's, you know, you've got to go over and above when you are responsible for so many children. So that policy in terms of not letting them out within 30 minutes, I think it is, of a thunderstorm,
right.
is very, very good. Very good.
Right. And I mean, there are lightning. Central Florida is still the capital for the number of lightning strikes. So we
right.
need our children. We want our children to be safe.
So what are, I guess, the new adjustments that a lot of the parents and students have had to make this year?
A couple things come to mind. One, we distributed about 140,000 laptops. That's not brand new, but our one-to-one ratio of students having their own device expanded to about a third of our elementary schools. So all of our high schools for the last few years, and then all of our middle schools split over 2 years to get them all up to speed, had the one-to-one
mm-hmm.
laptops thanks to the generosity of our community and that half-penny sales tax. And this year, about a third of our elementary school students have the one-to-one. Elementary school students don't take their laptops back and forth home with them, but the secondary students do. And I always like to tell people, Gretchen, that it is certainly not an indication that a laptop makes our children smarter or somehow does their instructional programs for them. It is simply a tool that our brilliant teachers use in order to make sure our children are being prepared for a future that is filled with technology. And so we're very proud of our digital learning program here in OCPS, and it is expanding again to the elementary levels. We've had some elementary schools with the one-to-one devices since 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago when we first started with the project, but expanding
mm-hmm.
to larger numbers of elementary schools is new this year. Secondly, we've got an extra emphasis around safety and security, that everyone is responsible to help keep our children safe. We have a new app called Fortify Florida that's statewide, that individuals, both parents, adults, community members, and children can report anything they think might be suspicious. And so we encourage everyone to be a part of keeping our schools safe. And then thirdly, in our code of conduct, we've added a couple of videos that our children have to watch because we see a growing trend, number one, of individuals thinking it's okay to joke about school safety and some kind of threat. You hear about it all over the country. Someone was arrested in another county. You cannot joke about school safety and harming children or a bomb or bringing a gun without getting serious consequences, including the police showing up at your house, and sometimes there's a potential for an arrest. But the second thing, Gretchen, is also disturbing for our young people. It's called vaping. People using e-cigarettes and any kind of paraphernalia that helps children consume tobacco products. Thing about it is, if you bring that on campus, that is contraband, shouldn't have it in your possession. It is a violation of our code of conduct at level 3, which can get you suspended. But if you have a vaping pen that has something that tests positive for marijuana or some controlled substance, then you're at a level 4 looking at an expulsion. And so we put in new videos made by our own children. Our students here helped create those videos to warn our young people. And everybody who has a laptop, by the way, have to watch those videos. They're all preloaded, and parents can watch them, see them on our website as well. But it's a warning that we take it very seriously. Number one, it's harmful to their health. We don't want parents to take it lightly. But secondly, it's against the law for minors to have tobacco products, and certainly for them to have anything like marijuana that they're using in those vaping pens. So we're very careful about that.
It's truly a shame that all of these additional distractions that our teachers and you have to worry about now. I can remember probably the time where probably the biggest distraction was wondering what the other person had in their lunch, you know, for some of these students, especially the young students. And now there's physical safety, there's, you know, bullying, you know, and not just physical bullying, but there's also, you know, bullying, psychological bullying, what people say about people on you know, on the computer through social media and all that type of stuff. So it's a lot to process, a lot to handle.
That's an important point, because included in our code of conduct now, you do some inappropriate things online on social media and it's disruptive to the school or threatening to individuals, we deal with that as well. You can be disciplined over that.
Well, I'm glad that you have these policies in place. I wanted to ask you, speaking of some of these policies, what type of impact did Parkland really have on in terms of what you're implementing today?
A couple of things. First, I think it's important to note our board, our previous board and our current board, had a significant emphasis around school safety before Parkland. People tend to forget Sandy Hook.
Right.
Years before, gave us a serious call to attention around school safety. And so our board has put several things in place and invested dollars beyond what the state was providing for some time now. And we don't talk at length about some of those strategies and precautions that are put in place, because it's an extra added measure of protection. If I don't advertise every way that I'm protecting a school, that is an extra layer of protection. And by state statute, we are allowed to hold some of that detail confidential. But some things are obvious. Like, folks know when they go to schools now, mostly there's one single point of entry, and you can't just walk into the school. You have to be, there has to be an engagement from somebody inside to actually let you into the school. And most of our schools, they can see there's perimeter fencing around them as well. But we have some things that are internal to the school around emergency preparedness and communication and safeguards that we just won't disclose details on. We had some experts actually give us recommendations, and we've been working on those for the last several years and quite pleased with our progress. I think the other thing that's important to note is around school safety officers. And so in some districts, they can hire guardians who are individuals, non-law enforcement individuals who agree and go through training and can carry a weapon on school to try to help protect students in the case of an emergency. Our board said we would prefer for law enforcement officers only, and it cost us some extra dollars because the state dollars don't stretch far enough for that. But this year we have one law enforcement officer, school resource officer, on every one of our traditional campuses. Last year we had to work through some compromises on coverage at the elementary level because we simply needed to give the sheriff's office enough time to train more officers because the demand was so great. But we take those provisions pretty seriously, and last night just adopted an additional policy required by the state after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas that said you'll have a threat assessment team in place. If there's a child that's struggling or troubled or some incident that's of concern, there's an actual threat assessment team, including your law enforcement officer on campus and some instructional staff and administrative staff, to work through and on a monthly basis make sure they're staying on top of any concerns for the school.
You also having a challenge with an influx of students because of what occurred in Puerto Rico between the storm and then also some of the political stuff that's going on over there. So how are you handling that influx as well? That's not the only influx. We need people to understand we are constantly receiving people from all across the country and the world that are coming to make Central Florida their home. But this is kind of swift and sudden. So how are you handling that?
Yes, so citizens that were relocating to Central Florida from Puerto Rico, by and large, we had greater numbers, we believe, than even districts in South Florida because we have a very large Puerto Rican population here. And so folks probably were coming where family or friends or acquaintances were. It was most familiar for them to migrate to this area. And so we did have thousands that were not expected initially, but we made provisions, made room for them. We had great partnerships. We hired a lot of their instructional staff or bus drivers or custodians, families that were coming in. We actually set up out at the airport to make sure we could help accommodate both their job needs and getting their children enrolled and giving them free backpacks with materials and supplies in them. Our team here did a phenomenal job, and the board was very supportive that whatever it took to accommodate those children, because they came, Gretchen, they didn't have school records or they didn't have report cards. I mean, they were ravaged. Their island was ravaged by a storm. And so we just said, you know what, come and register the child. We'll figure out if you say they were in third grade, we're going to put them in third grade. We'll figure out what their needs are. And it worked quite well because we had children that came from Puerto Rico that were taking advanced classes as well as those coming who didn't speak much English. Advanced classes, bilingual, high-performing, as well as those who may have been struggling with exceptionalities and special education needs or not speaking English. And so we were able to accommodate all of those because we have such a vast population here. Central Florida is an international community. Our children come from 157, I think the last count was 157 different countries, speaking all kinds of dialects and languages, but many of them being bilingual as well. So our community was well prepared for that. Since then, probably about half of those children that came have either gone back to Puerto Rico or they've migrated to other areas potentially where they had family, but we were happy to accommodate them.
So over the past year, how many new schools have you opened in order to accommodate them, but just in general, the population?
Sure. So we are projected to grow by about for students. And I will tell you, too, we have a large influx of students coming from Venezuela. We've had quite an influx from as well. So we were projected to grow by about 4,000 students. We actually opened three brand new schools, and then we opened what is considered a new school, but it was a merging of Pine Castle and Pershing elementary schools into a new K-8 school in the more central portion of the district. But all the three other new schools, two elementary and one middle school, are all on the west side of Orange County. That's where our most explosive growth is. We got a reprieve for a short period of time, but it is growing like gangbusters on the west side of the county again. So all of the brand new schools were on the west side.
Yeah, and I have seen that. In addition to that, I do real estate, so I see a lot of new construction, new houses and stuff like that, and yeah, new schools that are coming in as well. So with all of the schools and the students, of course, you need more teachers. How are you faring with teachers right now?
Our HR department did a phenomenal job. We opened probably with the lowest amount of vacancies we've had for some time. We actually had it was 40 or fewer vacancies. We're probably at the 30-something mark now. It's pretty good for a large urban district. Urban districts open with hundreds of vacancies. We're happy if we get below 100 because here's what happens, Gretchen. By the time we look at leveling our classes after the first 10 days of school or so, the chances are I have close to enough teachers. Some of them are just in the wrong schools. So one school is projected for growth at a certain level, and another school is projected at a lower growth, and something happens, and that school ends up needing more teachers, and another school has a few more teachers than they need. Well, if I move one or two teachers around where that's happening, I level out my classes, my class sizes based on actual enrollment instead of projection, then by the time we're done, those last 35 or so teachers may already be in the district. They just may not be in the right school yet.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. So we're going to take a very quick break. We're here with Dr. Barbara Jenkins, who is the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools here in Central Florida. So if you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good morning and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are grateful to have Dr. Barbara Jenkins with us today, the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools. And I wanted to ask you, I noticed at the beginning of the school year quite a few back-to-school drives. How have they helped in the classrooms here in Central Florida, and what are your biggest needs that you find that aren't being met or not being met as well?
That's a great question, and again, it's sort of a tribute to our entire community, because philanthropic organizations, volunteer organizations, businesses, Florida Hotel and Lodging, for example, we have so many partners who take it upon themselves to help fill in the gap where families that are struggling might need help trying to assure that children have what they need for the start of school. And so supply drives, backpack giveaways, big fairs where you can get everything from vacation to the from haircuts to the mm-hmm. shots that you might need. All of those kind of events have taken place on a fairly regular basis now, so that our children, our families, can get most of what they need for the start of the school year. Here's what's very telling. In Central Florida, where we're due to grow by about 4,000 students, quite frankly, for the last several years, we continue to grow while some communities in Florida either flatlined or started to decline in enrollment. And we suspect it's because families continue to migrate to our area because they thought it would just be a land of opportunity. Some of those opportunities and jobs were low-wage paying, and they did not match the cost of housing in Central
right.
Florida. We have an affordable housing issue, a concern in our community that everyone's fairly aware of. And so
right.
what ended up happening is we drove up our homeless population. So in Orange County, you know, maybe 10 years ago, our homeless population may have been around a couple thousand, which is concerning, but not disconcerting that you got a huge jump. And then we started seeing these big jumps from 2,000 to 5,000. All of a sudden, 5,000 became 7,000. Last year, we came close to 10,000 children whose families were dealing with homelessness. And so that creates significant issues around our children and their ability to come to school prepared to learn without the distractions around where am I going to sleep tonight and will we have enough food to eat. And so we've got partnerships that will do anything to help those families, including referrals and including Love Pantry actually providing food items, non-perishable food items that can be packed up and the kid takes home in a backpack over the weekend even, so that they don't feel like they have to worry about having enough food to eat. Because in some of our schools, we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner programs for children that might have need of it. So when the weekend rolls around, we don't want them to have food insecurities and stress and trauma in their lives around having enough food to eat. And so we have everything from clothes closets to help our families to food pantries that will pack up food for them to take home over the weekend.
That number just breaks my heart just to realize it, because studying, if you just have to study and absorb the information and pass the test and get to the next grade and graduate and all that, that's enough of a challenge. But just to have that, to come in with that extra weight is very difficult. So
it's hard on children and very young children sometimes. They shouldn't have to worry about those kind of adult issues. And we shouldn't be surprised that they might struggle with learning because they're so distracted by some of those issues. We have to, and our community does a good job at this, we have to mitigate and buffer our children, if you will, from some of those adult issues that they shouldn't be dealing with.
Exactly. Speaking of other issues, this is going to be a little controversial, but I wanted to ask you about some of the news stories that we've seen where there have been people within the school system that have unfortunately taken advantage of some of the students, becoming a little bit too familiar, I'll just put it that way, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
What efforts are being made to kind of curtail a lot of this type of behavior, some of these encounters, and to put the child at ease as much as possible in terms of coming to school and, you know, just getting the grades and just being there for what they're supposed to be there for.
So here's an important perspective. Number one, we take very seriously anyone who mistreats or has an inappropriate contact with a child, with a minor, someone who's given to us to care for. We take it extremely seriously, and we have significant safeguards in place and severe disciplinary actions should it come up. That being said, I think it's also important to note that in Orange County Public Schools, we have 14,000 teachers, over 14,000 teachers, and the vast majority of them do what is right and what is appropriate by our children, the vast majority. So last year, and I can't discuss any particulars, but there were a couple of issues last year. One of them was actually at a charter school. And so just for perspective, charter schools are not under our direct supervision. They have their own separate board and are not accountable to us other than at the point that they are approved as a charter and at the point that they have to be renewed as a charter if they're not managing their finances correctly. And so it's important. Sometimes people sort of mix and match them together, and we like to say, that was a charter school that got a lot of notoriety. It was not one of the schools that we are responsible for directly. Another instance, someone that was actually in one of our schools got quite a bit of notoriety, and I just have to tell you, we deal with it expeditiously and quite severely around disciplinary issues when it comes to our attention. Everyone's entitled to their day in court, but when it comes to our attention and we believe there's evidence, we deal with it significantly. New teachers get training around appropriate contact with children. You may think it's harmless to give a child a ride home or harmless to let them call you on your cell phone. We have guidelines and policies in place that say, you know, teachers can have a group messaging with all of our technology to the team that practice has been canceled, for example, but one-on-one text messaging with children, with students, is inappropriate. So we've got lots of policies and guidelines in place, and like I say, the vast majority of over 14,000 teachers never have an issue with it. It's when one does something inappropriate that a lot of notoriety is brought to it, that it's certainly unfortunate for the rest of the teachers who are going by the rules and would never harm a child. So all I can tell you is that we have strict guidelines in place and take very seriously any allegation, investigate it thoroughly and swiftly, and deal with the appropriate discipline.
I also want to talk about another issue with regards to the kids being left on the bus. I know there have been some stories on the news about that as well, you know, and we know mistakes happen, accidents happen, you know, when you're dealing with a large amount of kids, you know, so, you know, something sometimes happens. What type of policies are in place to kind of reduce those types of occurrences?
Sure. So we haven't had any incident like that. I should knock on wood. Daycares actually have had some significant issues, just heartbreaking issues. What's happened in the past, like I want to say a couple of years ago, maybe a baby, a kindergarten student, falls asleep on the bus. The driver gets to the compound, and the child, and then without realizing, the child has fallen asleep on the bus. So our guidelines in place say every bus driver, when you finish your run for the day, you inspect your bus. That includes going from the back to the front of the bus. You clean off any junk that might be on the bus, but you are visually inspecting the bus at the end of your ride. Most of our buses are going to do three runs. That means they usually deal with a high school run, and then they do an elementary run, and then they do a middle school run. And they just have procedures set in place. This is what you're supposed to do at the end of your day. And in between runs, there are inspections that are required that should prohibit careless mistakes being made. The kind made with vans and hot vehicles usually wouldn't be the case for ours, because our buses generally have the windows down. But we just have to be so careful of young children, and we think we have procedures in place that inspection by drivers should prohibit that from happening. Hadn't happened in some time here in Orange County, as I recall.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. So you really do seem to run a pretty tight ship. So what are your, I guess, biggest concerns for this particular school year coming up as we go?
I don't think any superintendent in this country would tell you they're not concerned and always aware of student safety. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day that I remember tornado drills when I was a child in school. He's a bit older. He remembered they do Cuban Missile Crisis time. They would do these nuclear drills. Never would I have imagined we'd have children from kindergarten through 12th grade needing to go through drills for an active shooter on campus. And so this day and age that we live in, and it's not just at schools, it's at concerts and in grocery store or in Walmarts and other public places, that you have to be so vigilant around safety. And so that's always going to be at the forefront of my mind, as well as any superintendent. The other thing is, as we grow, and we're very proud, I should mention, Ms. G, we're very proud that we regained our A status as a school system graded by the state, getting an A grade, something that we're very proud of. But as we continue to grow, we are ever aware that when populations grow, so do the needs grow. And so I'm convinced, and I think any research would back me up, that if you deal with some of those poverty issues so that children aren't dealing with toxic stress in their lives at the school setting, with people not being aware of it and knowing how to accommodate some of those needs, that children can learn at high levels. But so our continued watch has to be around how we're serving children of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
They could be gifted. I tell people all the time, we serve a beautiful tapestry of children from very affluent families. Some of the richest families in the community have their children in public schools. We're proud of that fact. We also have nearly 10,000 homeless families. But here's the deal. There's a homeless child who's also gifted, who is absolutely brilliant. You can't tell from the outside what's at work on the inside. And so we are ever vigilant around safeguarding children's educational potential, so that their zip code or their situation around how they are being housed does not dictate the opportunities that they have to be successful in the future. And so we are vigilant around this notion of making sure the doors of opportunity for taking higher level courses, for pursuing magnets and pursuing certain careers, that those are always available to every one of our children, not based on their zip code. So between those two, that's probably enough to keep me occupied.
Oh, yeah, and more, yes, for sure. I wanted to ask you, too, about your program that where you have the students, the high school students who are also taking college classes. How are they benefiting with that transitional type of curriculum?
Well, to graduate from high school with your AA degree puts you 2 years ahead of your peers, not only in the time that it'll take you to finish your four-year degree, but in the cost. So if you take dual enrollment classes with us, or if you take advanced placement classes through College Board with us, and you can earn college credit, you're saving dollars that you would have to pay in the future. We had over 40, I believe, last year graduate with their AA degree, but hundreds more who graduated with some college credit already under their belt. Maybe they didn't get enough for the actual AA degree, but they've got some college credit that is transferable. And we want all of our children to see college as a potential for their future, either through Orange Technical College or through one of our 2- and 4-year universities here in the state of Florida and beyond. We want every child to see that their future pathways include higher education.
And higher education,
I always say, includes Orange Technical College, because we can graduate somebody with an industry certification in welding, Gretchen, and they can command a salary of $80,000.
Right, and there's a lot of people that don't understand that. I mean, we get, I guess, I don't want to say brainwashed, but we do kind of get into this mindset where you go to high school, then you go to a 4-year college, and then whatever else happens after that. And it's not necessarily the case for everybody. Everybody has different gifts and skills that they can apply in various ways. And so, you have to keep people, aware that those technical colleges are very, very much a part of the plan for some people. But
absolutely.
I wanted to also ask you, though, about parental involvement. You have parents that are working, let's say, multiple jobs, but you still want them involved in the child's, school life. So, what type of challenges are you facing with that?
So we know full well some of our parents would like to be engaged, and they cannot be as engaged as others. So we have our faith council, over 100 different households of faith. Our interfaith council includes rabbi, imam, priest, minister, stake leader or stake administration representative. Any household of faith, they don't go in to proselytize. They go in to help mentor and tutor children. And so because there's enough missionary work to be done right here in our community to keep a lot of churches and households of faith busy. So number one, we depend on some of those. And I am so proud that churches that are located in areas that don't need as much help because they've got plenty of stay-at-home moms to volunteer, they take their volunteers and go to another area instead. St. Luke's, for example, over in the Windermere area, they go to a school like Pine Lock and volunteer there instead and have an impact there, where the PTA and the addition volunteer numbers might be low because parents are working. That's number one. Number two, we have a parent academy that both typically has sessions on Saturdays where more of our families can get to training and find out how they can better help their child at home. So then we start doing virtual parent academies as well, where you can use your smartphone or something to tune in and hear a virtual parent academy. We try to be convenient for our parents so that they can access the resources that they need. Thirdly, we have parent liaisons in a lot of our Title I schools who will not just be available at school with parent resources for parents when they can come in, but they will go out into the community and do home visits to try to make sure they're assisting parents with what they can be doing at home to help give their children a better chance for success at school. And then lastly, I think it's important when we talk about parental involvement, people think that means volunteering and coming to the PTA meeting and the bake sale. The best parental involvement, we keep getting this message across as often as we can, the best parental involvement is what you do with your child at home around school. You make school a priority. You make them understand how important it is to their future. You take it seriously. You have them read to you every night. You read to them every night, even older children. If they've got a social studies chapter to read, let them read it out loud to you. You read one paragraph, they read the next, so they see you engage in their education as it being something pretty important. And I tell parents at our parent academies, I've said in my opening comment, you may not understand calculus, but I still want you to say, show me your homework. What did you work on today? Do you have homework? Let me see it. You don't need to be able to interpret it. It may look like Greek to you, but they need to understand my mom, my dad take school so seriously, they're always going to ask me about what's going on in school and let me see your homework or let me show me what your last grades were. And that engagement means you go to a parent-teacher conference when it's required and you try to get to open house so they know that you're engaged, and you look online through our interactive provisions for parents to monitor their child's assignments and their grades. Back when I was in school, my mom wouldn't know how well my grade was going to be until the report cards came out. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, parents can monitor online because teachers input information through something called Skyward, and parents can monitor online and say, Jimmy, you didn't turn in your homework. Jimmy, you're missing that project. I know you did it. Did you turn it in? This is what I used to say to my son. It's crumpled up in the bottom of your book bag. Yeah, you're going to need to turn it in to get credit. And so parents are able to interactively, through the magic of technology in our digital world, to see in real time whether or not a student is missing assignments and engage that way as well.
That's good, and that is so important to help the parent in whatever way, you know, you can to keep them engaged, you know, and encourage
Absolutely.
That relationship with the child. I know, I remember around my senior year, I started taking all these interesting classes, I would say, like photography and some other things, and my guidance counselor called me into his office, and it's like, does your mom know you're taking these other classes? And it's like, yeah, but if you look, I have all of my required courses already done, so I have to take electives. So, you know, he was like, and he looked just like, okay, he said, because I know your mom was not going to let you just take anything, you know, because she was on top of it, you know, and it's kind of hard, you know, but everybody has to kind of work together to make sure that the child is getting what they need and also,
That's
you
right.
know, enjoying school in the process, too.
That's right. Electives are there for a reason. We have to engage children, get them hooked by whatever we can. But we also
exactly.
have to push them. I tell them we don't do the senior slouch year. That senior year, you can take another AP course. Hey, let's get another college credit knocked out as well. That's what we tell young people.
That's true. That's so true. But, you know, we want to make sure, too, that these kids are doing things, you know, outside of just the classroom, too, you know, community service and having good hobbies and all that mm-hmm. type of stuff as well.
We have dozens of clubs in high school. The key is to keep them busy. And so
yes.
we have dozens of clubs, all kinds of clubs. You know, it doesn't have to be just band or the athletic teams. We've got lots
mm-hmm.
of clubs and volunteer activities that our young people can take advantage of. And that's what a good, strong high school does. They just find a niche for every child.
Most certainly. We are here with Dr. Barbara Jenkins, who is the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. If you have a question for Dr. Jenkins, the number is 516-387-1944. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. If you have questions for Dr. Barbara Jenkins, who is the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools, the number is 516-387-1944. And Dr. Jenkins, I wanted to ask you about this heightened awareness about mental health, especially when it comes to our young people. And, you know, at one time, talking about mental health was kind of like a taboo type of thing. But now it seems to be more coming more and more into focus for a variety of reasons. And most importantly, I guess, right now, is because of some of the violence that has taken place at some of our schools. Are there new efforts to address mental health among students in our schools?
Sure. There's actually we have things around health and mental health awareness, and around character ed or social emotional learning from kindergarten through 12th grade, and programs in place. And just as importantly, the state gave additional allocation so that we have even more mental health counselors and social workers available to help our children maneuver through difficulties. And then I say to our teachers at the beginning of the school year, I just need every teacher to convey this message to your students that if you ever have a problem, if you ever have a need, you can come to me. Because I need them to have an outlet to understand that every adult cares about them and their future. And then the teacher doesn't have to have the expertise to counsel. The teacher then hands off to an administrator or to a counselor that individual to make sure they get the help that they need. But the state of Florida, after what happened, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas has invested some additional dollars for mental health counselors and social workers and the like that can help serve the needs of our children more so than ever. I think at last count, we had like 140 additional positions that we wouldn't have had, you know, 2 or 3 years ago in the whole area of student services.
So wanted to also ask you about having to deal with I guess you would say sexual orientation issues on campus. I know that has kind of emerged as an issue for some. How does Orange County Schools deal with that?
So in our bullying policy and in our EEO policy as well, we're very clear that sexual orientation is certainly to be respected and acknowledged. If we have a child who's actually going through a more traumatic transition, we certainly deal with that in a one-on-one basis. But we've got general policies in place, and we have gay straight alliance clubs on all of our high school campuses so that there's a place for young people to meet and to interact and to feel supported as well. We have never considered this district, as some have tried to enforce this notion that you will be referred to by whatever was on your birth certificate. Our board has never been that harsh with our children who have gender orientation changes that need to be accommodated. So we try to have open door policy with both adult staff that can help our children, Gay Straight Alliance Club, so that they have peer interaction and engagement around their needs as well.
Okay. At the same time, I also wanted to ask you about people that come into school with various religious or faith preferences. I know there's always trying to walk that fine line between church and state, I guess. But at the same time, we're trying to do a number of things to, I guess, strengthen our children as they go forward with all of the additional things that they have to deal with just getting through school. Are faith practices accepted or discouraged, or how is that working within the school system?
So it's an interesting predicament because I would love to certainly influence children around having some faith intact for their futures. It's not something that the school system can push forward. In fact, I mentioned earlier there can be no proselytizing for any religion. So our
right.
council says anybody can come in and volunteer, but can't talk about your religion or try to get anybody converted to your religion. That's a no-no because it is an issue. Years ago, we used to allow Bible distributions and got a challenge, as others did, I think, across the country, got a challenge from an organization that represented atheists, and they said if you allow the distribution of Bibles to continue free after school, whenever they're distributing them after school or on campus, Gideon's set up to do that, then we insist that we will also be allowed to distribute atheist information and literature. To make a long story short, when it all boils down on a public school setting, if you allow one, you have to allow the other. And so our board, this was years ago now, it's old news, our board said, yeah, we are not adamant enough to try to provide for everyone to distribute on campus. How about everybody just distribute off campus? And then we won't be in the middle of this quandary. Because that separation, you can have fellowship of Christian athletes clubs. You can certainly allow distribution of Bibles. It just means that you have to open the door wide for anyone who contests it and says, I also want to distribute my information. And so our board wisely said, you know what, that's not a business that we should be in anyway. Let your distribution take place off campus from here on out. Whoever wants to distribute whatever they want to distribute, it's not a part of the school setting. This day and age in this country, I think that clear line has been drawn. We may see some movement trying to go back in the other direction, but the line is pretty clear now. When it comes to student-led prayer, our policy is very clear on that. Athletic games and activities, or at a any student activity where the students have determined that they want a prayer and they lead it, it is absolutely legal and allowable. There should not be adults telling everyone to kneel down and let's have a word of prayer. It has to be student-led. So the challenges and the legalities around all of that are pretty cut and dry. And we know exactly how close we can go to that line without crossing over it.
just so much on your plate. I have to say, I do not envy you, but I truly admire you for taking the on. And are we now the 10th largest school district?
Oh, no, we're number 8. We're number 8.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah,
that was about
215,000 students. So last year we were publishing 9. So if you see something with number 10, that's really old. Last year we hit
really
9.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
we hit 9 and then we hit 8. We're number 8.
Wow, it's we're running toward that. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but at least we want to make sure that all of our students are taken care of.
Absolutely, all 215,000.
All 215,000. We want them to get where they need to be. We want to get them all graduated. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. That's the end game.
That's the end game. We got to remember that. So how can the community help you and your employees, your teachers and counselors and coaches? How can the community help?
I would say our greatest need is probably to have more mentors for some of our children that are most in need of additional influences over their lives. So the impact, the influence of one additional adult in a young person's life other than their own parent, and quite often it's a single parent, that impact can increase exponentially the chances that they will graduate from high school on time and have a pretty promising future. And so our Minority Achievement Office actually has been recruiting mentors for specific schools where we know the need is the greatest, and with the goal of saying they'll have 1,000 mentors by the end of their campaign. I think they topped 600 last year, so they've got about 400 more to go. And so I would say any of your listeners might consider volunteering to mentor. All they have to mentor or volunteer. If you don't want to mentor a particular student, you can certainly volunteer, teach a few kids how to read or support them however they might need support. And all they have to do is go to their local school and fill out information to become an admissions volunteer. And then from there, they can also determine if they'd like to be a mentor. That's the biggest contribution we need now from our community. This community has been so generous. A $1 million property tax helps keep our heads above water when we don't get as much funding as we would like from the state. And the Halfpenny sales tax has beautiful new school campuses and renovated campuses all over Orange County. And as I mentioned, it pays for the technology in our schools as well and those laptops. So that kind of support has been phenomenal. More of the in-kind or the actual human capital is probably where we can use the most assistance at this point, volunteering or mentoring some of our young people that have the greatest needs.
Now, for your mentoring program, do you need the people with a particular background? And then also, do they go through a particular screening process like your school employees do?
Yeah, so for addition volunteers, they go through a screening process and fingerprinting. And then there are different levels of volunteers. If you want to be with a small group of students as opposed to coming in and helping supervise lunch duty, but that goes through a screening process for the Admissions Volunteers program. And then from there, you can graduate up to being a mentor if you're interested, and they have a little bit of training to put you through so that you're prepared to be a mentor through our Minority Achievement Office.
Now, I'm probably going to date myself, and I don't have children, unfortunately, so that I'm probably going to ask about something that may be obsolete, but do you still have job shadowing programs?
We have apprenticeships. So we don't want children just to be job shadowing. We want them to be engaged in an industry certification and then engaged in an apprenticeship, which leads to employment. Say if you're in the trades area or that very lucrative welding program, then or an electrician, we want you to be able to both take classes and then engage and see what the work is like and engage in an apprenticeship that leads to employment. So job shadowing is not quite enough. We want engagement that's going to actually lead to employment, not just familiarity. Industry certification, apprenticeship, and employment is the track we try to lead students down.
That's wonderful, wonderful. Dr. Jenkins, really appreciate your time. Like I said, I know that you've got more than – your cup runneth over, really.
I have to tell you, I still love the work. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to be superintendent here. So much support in this community and so much help that we receive. It helps us to accomplish our mission around leading our students to success. So I love the work.
Wonderful. And that's important. A lot of people don't understand that. You have to really love your work in order to be the most effective at it. And you can tell the love that you've put in. So thank you very much for taking the lead, taking the helm here in Orange County for the kids.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me on, Gretchen.
Thank you so much. Have a very blessed day now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Don't forget to mentor or support your school system in any way you can. Have a very blessed day, everyone. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.